morning, Pierre. How are you?
I thought I got relieved of my duties. Good morning, Steve. Hello, Sean.
Morning, Pierre, and my apologies. My fault.
Okay, we're good. So... we're good. By the way, that's one of those deals. You're talking about Sergachev signing yesterday with Tampa. That's one of those deals where if you're Mark Bergevin, you're sitting there going, okay, did we misevaluate this player internally? Did we overestimate what Jonathan Drouin could do for our team? How did this go so far off the rails in a one-for-one? And I'll never forget that it happened. I called up the chief scout at the Tampa Bay Lightning that day, and I said, how did you pull this off? He goes, they were anxious to do it, and we were anxious to do it.
And wow. Do you also, to that, Pierre, because I look at the Drouin situation, do you give credit to Tampa Bay? Because there was also, I know, behind the scenes, they said, listen, we're fearful he'll go somewhere and take off. We're not going to make a deal till the deal's right, similar to what Joe Sakic did with Duchesne.
Oh, I think that's more than fair. And again, it comes down to your evaluation of players. They knew internally they needed to add Sergachev to their team. They had more than enough offensive firepower in their organization, and they knew they had guys coming along. So to be fair to Jonathan Drouin in Montreal, Montreal really valued a Francophone star who could score. They valued that, and you can understand it. So the value that they placed on that was a dominant, big, physical defenseman who can run a power play. That's how much it cost them to get Jonathan Drouin. This is whenever we have hockey back again, this is a massive year for Jonathan Drouin. He's got to deliver. But for Sergachev and for Tampa, this is a really strong contract because of the signing bonus. I know the numbers look low at the beginning, the first 2 years, but the signing bonus alleviates some of that in the first 2 years. And then the third year at 7.4, that's about where a player like that would fit in anyways in this marketplace. So they value him as a core seven player for them, and he should be. He's really that good.
If he's not with Tampa, because I mentioned this earlier, if you're going to play in the same team as Victor Hedman, you're not the one. You're not a number one defenseman. And, you know, Ryan McDonagh is a more important defenseman at this point in time to the Lightning than Sergachev. So it's 4.8 in the cap hit. What is his true ceiling here, Pierre? Is this a guy that you could see, for all intents and purposes, be that one-ish type defenseman when he's fully developed in the NHL?
You know, Steve, it's really interesting. He's breaking in with a team where he's so insulated. He can learn from Hedman every day, and he can learn from McDonagh every day. There are very few players in the league, and I mean this sincerely, and I know every player in the league. There are very few guys that have the professionalism and the work habits of Ryan McDonagh. So when you're around him, you have to keep up, because if you don't, you will fall behind. And that's one of the things that's really helped him over time, just his professionalism. So if you're Sergachev watching that, and you're saying, holy mackerel, this guy's good. And then you see Hedman. Then you see Hedman, and you're like, wow, this guy is 6'6". He's 235 pounds, and he is an amazing athlete that can play. And you know what? I'm not far off from there. I can get there, but I got to work like him, and that's what he's doing.
And to that, Pierre, on the Montreal side, you go through the list of trades under Mark Bergevin. That one they lost on both sides, but the majority of the trades that they've made, I think they might be the best pro scouting staff in the league.
They're right there for sure, and I'm going to agree with you. That's why I said they put a premium on a Francophone scoring player at that juncture of development in their team building. Now, again, to be fair, I was there the day after the trade deadline when Brett Connolly got traded to the Boston Bruins by the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I just had to be right by the runway where Steve Yzerman and Jonathan Drouin were talking. Now, remember, it wasn't always peaches and cream between Jonathan Drouin and the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, Alan Walsh was not happy with the way that his player was being treated, the agent. And so I'll never forget saying this, and I really respected him for doing it. He said, we believe in you. We trust you're going to be a really good player for us. This is your opportunity. We're giving it to you. Because Connolly was moved out to create space for Drouin. And I'm not sure real rush to want to trade Connolly, to be honest with you. They wanted to give Drouin an opportunity. And in one playoff series against Pittsburgh, it materialized. But outside of that, it didn't. And so they recognized as a team in Tampa, they needed defense. They wanted to build their defense. They had more than enough offense. And that's why they did the deal from their point of view. The Montreal side of it, it still hasn't manifested itself to the level they wanted to.
Pierre, we're going to reconnect with you really quick. We got a little bit of a gremlin on the line, so we'll get to Hammer to call you right back here, and hopefully we'll get that just to be a little bit better here. But, you know, we could hear and understand, but everybody listening can hear just a little gravelly there in our connection. And, you know, he's right, and Jonathan Drouin, we know why that deal was made, right?
Yeah.
This is a potential French-Canadian superstar, that's what you're thinking at the time of the deal, and you bring him in. And the skill is undeniable. You watch the skill level of Drouin. It is all there, but, man, it is it's hard to look at it right now and say that's a fair trade-off right now.
And also do a little homework. And I said this at the time, same as I said as Cody Ceci. Can he handle the pressure going to Montreal? This is a guy that when he was sent by the farm team, and Alan Walsh did a terrible job handling him, he went home. I mean, there's a character flaw here, and the maturity was never there. I thought last year, Lloyd, at least in last year's regular season, he finally turned the corner. But if he's not doing anything for you offensively, he ain't doing anything. I mean, he is about as one-dimensional. And if that one dimension isn't there, then, you know what, he's a useless player.
Okay, well, we've got him back, and it's Pierre McGuire from NBC Sports. So let's move on. We've kind of covered that here. Big news from the World Junior Selection Camp. This is going to be tough now. It's kind of like the draft, isn't it, Pierre? You're going to have to pick this team based on prior knowledge, as the quarantine period now is going to shut this selection camp down for 2 weeks. What are your thoughts?
I don't think that'll be that difficult for Team Canada. They're overly stocked with a lot of great players. They know that. They're deep enough. If they sent two Canadian teams, they might have a chance to play Canada 1, Canada 2 in the gold medal game. I mean, that's how deep Canada is, and that's no disrespect meant to the other teams. Just because we won't have NHL, then you'll have NHL players that will be available to you. That makes it really, really difficult for the other teams around the world. All that being said, the only thing I'm concerned with, and I thought about it a lot since I got those text messages probably like you guys got yesterday from the camp, and obviously the two-week delay, I just worry about mission creep. Soldiers go through this all the time when they're in a position where they're in the same situation day after day after day, and the monotony kicks in day after day after day, and finally you lose your focus. And, the mission creep really creates a problem. I hope that doesn't happen with this team just because of the two-week layoff. I hope that's the only concern I have about this. Outside of that, I don't think it'll affect them in their ability to play on the ice.
Hopefully with a phone, video games, and a strong mini bar, you can end up making it through up here. When you come out of this in the 2 weeks, would you ever think of doing fitness evaluations? Because I do think, and they're young men, but when I look at how, first of all, how some might be affected by the virus, but would you ever worry about that? Or do you think, you know what, 2 weeks from now, still got 2 weeks until your opening game, everybody should be able to get into tip-top shape?
No, I would be worried about that. That'd be one of the things I'd be wanting to talk to my strength and conditioning people about. I'd want to talk to our doctors about what are the best ways that I can maintain fitness levels with this group. Because obviously most of them are in unbelievable shape going in. As you have to believe, there's no way they would have made it to this point if they weren't. My biggest concern, and we talked about it maybe yesterday or the day before, I forget now, their depth at center is overwhelming. How many of those centermen are going to have to move to the wing? Because I think basically the skill level of those centermen that Canada has is so overwhelming. It may be a player like Newhook, maybe a player like Byfield has to move over. Maybe Kirby Dodd moves to the wing. Maybe Dylan Cousins moves to the wing. That's going to be the interesting thing, is how they're going to do it down the middle and how that affects how they pick their team. That's the only thing I would worry about in terms of selection process with the group.
Johnny Boychuk, unfortunately, has to retire due to an eye injury, and he's had eye problems in the past and had a more recent one this past March. Played a little bit in the bubble, but he's talked to specialists, and saw the video of him yesterday. It was really, he teared up. It was heartfelt. Doesn't want to stop playing, unfortunately, but he has to medically. What are your thoughts on the career of Johnny Boychuk?
First time I ever saw him play, he was playing for the Calgary Hitmen in the Western Hockey League. Next time I saw him play, he was playing for the Moose Jaw Warriors. And then the next time I saw him play, he was playing for a potpourri of teams in the American Hockey League. And he really never found his traction as a pro until he got into the Bruins organization and really did well. And maybe Sean saw him a lot with the Providence Bruins before he really got his opportunity in Boston. But what I remember the most, and it was something that I'll always cherish, is visiting was in Ottawa the day after Johnny Boychuk got traded to the New York Islanders, and Chara was livid. He was really upset. He said, "This is a major loss for our organization. I don't think people realize how important Johnny was to the way we played, physical, tough, offensive." And I used to call them the bombers from the blue line. Back then, Chara could really shoot the puck. Seidenberg could really shoot the puck. And Boychuk could really shoot the puck. The long-range bombers from Boston, and they would just torpedo your team because the Bruins would crash everything down in the net and get the puck back to the point and just launch it and create all these second and third-chance opportunities. So I was really hurt yesterday when I saw this. I respect him so much. Not just as a player. He was a really robust, stout player. But as a person... You talk to Mark Recchi, you talk to Zdeno Chara, talk to Patrice Bergeron, I'll talk to any of the guys that play with him on the Islanders, Josh Bailey, Johnny Tavares, any of those guys, they'll tell you the same thing. One of the best teammates I ever had. I spoke with Lou Lamoriello early this morning, and he said, one of the truly great professionals I've ever had the privilege of working with. That says a lot. Lou Lamoriello doesn't hand out compliments very often. I can just tell you that right now. That says all you need to know about Johnny Boychuk.
And Lou also has an incredible ability of making contracts disappear. And to that, Pierre, this is a situation that makes sense for both sides, right? In essence, the value of the player on the salary cap and for where they're at, and at the same time from a health standpoint, quite simply, with 2 years left at his age, at 36, it works out for both sides.
Well, it does, but I don't think Johnny was ready to retire. I can tell you that, Sean. And I understand your point about contracts disappearing. Lots of teams have that ability to do that, but I don't think that's the case in this situation. I feel terrible for Johnny. He really wanted to keep playing. I'll tell you a quick story about him. He was playing for the Bruins, and he got hit in a game. He wasn't wearing a shield at the time. And, you know, everybody at that time was really worried about eye injuries. It's when Mark Stahl in New York got hurt, and that's when all the Stahl boys put shields on. And I remember Johnny Boychuk one time saying his mom told him the same thing. If he didn't put a shield on, he wasn't going to be playing. And, you know, and he did. He put it on. And so it's amazing that, you know, he gets hurt around the eye, even though he had a shield on. It shows you how dangerous the game can be around the eyes in particular. And obviously, this is a thing that has ended his career. But I would just tell you this. Been in the league over 30 years. Very few people that I've met that have handled themselves like Johnny Boychuk over the course of 30 years.
Well, he didn't become a full-time NHL player until 5 or 6 years into his pro career, and I think maybe that's part of the appreciation from so many teammates over the years, Pierre.
Correct. Oh, well, I can just tell you again, I gave you a little bit of his pedigree, you know, starting with Calgary and moving to Moose Jaw and then playing for so many different teams in the American Hockey League before he ever really got a sniff. It reminds me a lot.
Right? You know, he'd be good or bad, but at the end of the day, he got his payday and, as you said, put in the long hours and made it the hard way.
Oh, yeah, right. Sure he did.
We'll leave it there. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Pierre. I know that you're north of the border right now, but celebrate Thanksgiving, and we got a couple of football games later today. Do you have any special plans at all today?
No, we're in quarantine, but there are a lot of wild turkeys. When I was a kid growing up here, and you can talk to anybody that grew up around the Trumbull area, there were no wild turkeys when I was growing up around here. Trust me, there were deer, there were bear. You know, there were a lot of other types of animals, rabbits. There were no wild turkeys. I've never seen a population of wild turkeys like I've seen right now.
Are those?
No, it's amazing.
Do you know the origin of that?
I do not.
No, it's actually, the original one came in, I think it was 72, was pardoned at the White House, and then they were actually brought to Trombla.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I just gotta tell you, I've seen a lot of stuff over here over the course of being here since 1960s. I've never seen this many wild turkeys ever.
And does anybody ever eat them here?
They're not good to eat.
Okay.
No. There might be the dumbest creatures on the planet. They will drown in the rain and just look to the sky. So, anyways,
it really is. Have a good one. Happy Thanksgiving to our American listeners. Talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.